Hello again, Internet. I am your host, Mike Robles, and welcome to the D&D podcast. I am joined once again by Rodney and Jeremy. Gentlemen, always a pleasure to have you guys here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, and hello, everyone.
Right. It's been a couple months. Things have been busy. You guys have been super busy with D&D Next, and that's one of the major talking points for today's podcast, is we're going to talk about the most current playtest. So, what's up, guys? What happened? Let's talk about the newest playtest that just went out.
We just released it yesterday.
Yesterday, as of this recording.
Yeah, and this is now our second packet since Gen Con. We released a smaller one at the beginning of this month. And I say smaller, but it was actually a lot of material. The magic items.
Right.
We gave people pages and pages of magic items and magic item rules to start playing with. And so yesterday, the focus of it was bringing the classic four classes up to level 10. And to accomplish that, we not only needed to revise the classes, but then also provide new spells for the cleric and the wizard, new maneuvers for the fighter.
And the rogue.
And now the rogue. Yep,
that's right.
That's one of the changes in this packet, is we're experimenting with the rogue also having maneuvers. Also, bringing the game up to level 10 required backing up a truck filled with monsters and unleashing them upon the game. So,
yes.
Rodney, how many new monsters would you say there are in this packet?
Boy, I don't know the exact number, but it's somewhere in the 70s because we have not only the monsters that were created specifically for Isle of Dread, we also expanded the bestiary out pretty significantly.
Yeah, and you mentioned Isle of Dread, which is yet another part of this packet. This packet included an updated version of the classic adventure, The Isle of Dread, which is kind of a mashup of King Kong's Island, you know, with dinosaurs and whatnot. I also think of it as Lovecraft's Ryla. When I've run the adventure,
there is an element of that. Definitely.
Yeah, to me, Cthulhu is sleeping there, waiting to be awakened. And let's see, the packet also has all sorts of revised feats. It
right.
has an expanded skill list. The skill system has been tweaked. We have new combat options like grabbing and disarming. So of the public playtest packets that we've released so far, this one adds the most by far to the game. Yeah. It also, this time around, takes a few things away. The warlock and the sorcerer, which appeared at Gen Con, are not featured in the current packet. And there are also some specialties and their accompanying feats that have appeared before that are not presently in the packet. And this is a natural part of the playtest process where we shift focus, where we want feedback on different pieces of the game. The Warlock and the Sorcerer have not been cut from the game because I know even
right.
though even though we include a note saying, you know, we're exploring new directions, I imagine there, somebody out there will get the pack and think, oh my God, the Warlock and the Sorcerer have been axed from Dungeons & Dragons.
The internet never jumps to conclusions.
No,
guys.
No.
Never.
But no, they simply have they have gone back to their magic headquarters, and we are experimenting on them.
Yeah, we definitely are really taking another hard look at those while we also continue to expand out the core four classes.
Yeah, and the primary reason for those two classes not being a focus for the current packet is because of the playtest feedback that we have received since we released them. We received a lot of valuable feedback, and that has led us to want to do a deep dive back into the design of both of those classes and bring them back in a future packet. People will also see that we've done some pretty big changes in the classic four classes. We already mentioned the rogue is now getting to play with expertise dice and maneuvers, which we gave to the fighter in the Gen Con packet. People will see that the cleric's class features have changed quite a bit. Turn Undead is a bit more like its classic form. The domain choice has been recast as a choice of deity. Big change for wizards is now each wizard chooses a tradition of wizardry, and their choice gives them a set of unique class features that are flavored for their particular tradition. And this packet features three traditions, the academic tradition, the tradition of battle magic, and the tradition of illusions. And there are bound to be others in future packets.
Yeah, it really represents our first stab at trying to find ways to differentiate wizards of, you know, various archetypes from one another.
Yeah, and because looking over the history of D&D, there have been all sorts of different types of wizards. I mean, even just in a single setting like the Forgotten Realms, you know, wizards from different parts of the world have different magic traditions. You'd then go to a setting like Dragonlance, where you have, you know, the wizards of the white robes, the wizards of the red robes, the wizards of the black robes.
Right.
This tradition of wizardry approach allows us within the wizard class to represent all of those different types of wizardry.
It sounds like there's an awful lot in this packet. I mean, there's always a lot in the packets, but I mean, this time you got characters level 1 to 10. You've got, you know, the wizards have these new feats. How long are you guys hoping players use this packet for? Like, I'm not asking when the next playtest packet's coming. I'm just wondering, like, how long will you be collecting feedback for this stuff? Because, again, if you didn't pick up on it, they are listening to your feedback, and they are taking your feedback and making those changes. And so my question to you guys is, how long do you guys want to be collecting feedback for this latest packet? Because there's an awful lot that is in this packet this time.
Right up until the next packet comes out, basically.
Yes.
I know that's a kind of a cop-out answer, but one of the things we did do is we tweak the way we handle our surveys slightly so that they stay open after they're posted. So we will continue to look at the feedback we get in, and until that next packet comes out, everything that's in the current packet is still needs playtesting.
And because we've given a full adventure, the Isle of Dread, because we've given, you know, this truck full of monsters, new spells to use for the wizard and the cleric, new combat maneuvers to try out, and then combined with all of the magic items we released earlier in the month, there is material for people to play with for at least a month to 2 months.
Yeah. Wow.
One of the reasons why we picked the Isle of Dread specifically is that the Isle of Dread is really more of a backdrop than a specific adventure in a lot of ways. So there are plenty of opportunities for the Dungeon Master to take the monsters that we've created for the bestiary and then create his own small sub-adventures to take place on the Isle of Dread. So we're hoping that what people will do is, over the course of however long they choose to play with this packet, they can try out many different levels, design their own adventures, create their own encounters, use the monsters in the bestiary that we provided to flesh out the Isle of Dread or their own adventures, etc., and really take everything from characters to the things on the Dungeon Master side of the screen, take them out for a test drive all the way through all 10 levels.
Yeah, and it's been fun to see over the last couple of months in our internal playtesting to see how each DM who's been running the Isle of Dread completely recasts it. I mean, so it is a fantastic backdrop because it is so easily moldable by a particular DM. It's like this, you know, the adventure is made out of Play-Doh, and each DM gets to play with it. You know, one of the ones I was playing in, the island was recast as a part of the Domains of Dread in Ravenloft. It's surrounded by this mist. The island was cursed, so everything that died on the island came back as a zombie. And so, you know, I'm playing in that one, and my character is convinced that they have all died and gone to hell. Sort of, it's like, and he's always, you know, saying, "We're in hell," because everything they fight just comes right back. When I ran it briefly, I ran it as Ryla, and the island was filled with Mind Flayer artifacts and strange Cthulhoid statues. I know other people have been running it as essentially King Kong's Island, you know, with Kong in the center and dinosaurs. So it's really a fantastic adventure location, particularly for playtesting, because you can get so much mileage out of just this one adventure.
Yeah, I found that week to week, since I've been running Isle of Dread for my group, I've been able to sort of adapt what encounters I've been planning to run based on what we need to have playtested, right? And so I hope that our audience will do the same thing. And basically, as they gain levels, the DM will create new material for them to play through. So, for example, another good example of how the adventure changes based on who's running it, in mine, basically what's happened is they have no idea what's going on, but something's going on at the center of the island, where when people go to the center of the island, they come back wrong and basically sort of twisted in a very Lovecraftian sense, and not necessarily full of tentacles and horrible monstrosities, but more just wrong in the head. And so now the players are going around the island, and they've discovered, oh, hey, there's this strange giant slab with this crazy carving on it that somehow made a giant carnivorous ape intelligent enough to start performing rituals, and just sort of this...
It's kind of terrifying.
It is, right? I mean, they basically stumbled onto King Kong's cave lair where they found the giant monolith and the giant ape was, you know, performing a ritual with all these dead human bodies around it. And it basically sort of a horror meets King Kong mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. right? But they're starting to unravel what's happening at the center of the island very slowly.
Wow.
Now, one thing that people are likely to notice in this packet is the introduction of rules that are a bit more complex than we've seen in the previous packets. And so this is an example of us experimenting with different levels of complexity in the game. People notice in the combat rules I mentioned before, there are now rules for grabbing and disarming. So we're eager to see people playtesting those rules, giving us feedback on them. We're basically testing how far we want to go with complexity in the core game,
right.
what should instead move into an optional rules module. We're experimenting with some slightly more complex options in the wizard with signature spells. These are, you know, a wizard, at least a battle mage or an illusionist now gets a spell that he or she can cast every 10 minutes. You know, they are able to hold back some of the magical energy as they cast the spell, and then over time they regain that magic and they're able to release the spell again. It's
right.
Color spray for the illusionist. And if I remember correctly, Magic Missile for the Battle Mage.
Thunderwave, isn't it?
Thunderwave, yes.
Yeah.
Thunderwave for the Battle Mage, or the Evoker. We're also calling it the Evoker.
Right.
But speaking of Magic Missile, people will see signs of playtest feedback all over this packet. In previous packets, Magic Missile was level 0. In this packet, it's gone back to being a first level spell, and because of that change, it is quite a bit more potent.
Yes.
Oh, wow, nice.
Also, another big change for our spellcasters in the playtest is clerics and wizards no longer by default are able to cast all of their zero level spells, or what were called minor spells in the previous packet, at will. They now need to prepare those spells, but each deity choice in the cleric and each tradition of wizardry choice in the wizard gives certain zero-level spells to the cleric or wizard that they can cast at will.
Right.
And this gives us the ability to customize our clerics and wizards a bit more, and also is putting less pressure on a DM's world to have to account for the fact that every wizard everywhere can do certain, you know, can detect magic at will, or every cleric everywhere can cast light at will. This
right.
means that different types of clerics, different types of wizards will have different magical capabilities.
Yeah, we also made some changes on the fighter and rogue side of things. The maneuvers system was previously slightly different than it is now. One of the things we did with this packet is we revised all of the maneuvers so that they all use your expertise dice.
Yes.
We got a lot of really positive feedback on people liking the expertise dice for the fighter, and so we wanted to make sure that when you have a maneuver, if you're a rogue or a fighter, that maneuver uses those dice in you know, the way where you roll them to do it. So a lot of the maneuvers got tweaked so that they use your dice in that manner.
The starting die also changed.
Yes.
In the playtest feedback we got was pretty resounding that people really liked expertise dice overall, really liked the direction we were going in with maneuvers, but people were also telling us, wow, the fighter is powerful. And our internal playtesting showed that as well. But one thing we're going to often do throughout this playtest, and I've mentioned this already, is basically see how far can we go.
Right.
What's too much? And the best way for us to figure that out is through playtesting. You know, basically see at what point does the game break down. It turned out starting you off with a D6 that you could just layer on round after round was a bit much. So we have dialed it down to a D4. And as we mentioned, now the rogue gets maneuvers. And one of the things I'm really excited about where we're going with maneuvers is, A, they're just really fun in play. And Rodney knows that's kind mm-hmm. of amazing for me to say.
It is.
Since I am not a big player of non-magic users. But I've been having a ball playing a fighter in the playtests. You know, my character who thinks he's in hell in the Isle of Dread is a fighter. But I also like that we are exploring a shared space of maneuvers. So people will see in the packet that the fighter and the rogue have a number of maneuvers in common, just as clerics and wizards have some spells in common.
Right.
But people also see that the rogue has some maneuvers that are unique to the rogue, just as the fighter has maneuvers that are unique to the fighter. And I really like that we're exploring common ground, which is useful for people who want to switch from class to class, and there'll be something there. Hey, I know how this works. You know, I know how to parry. But then you get to the rogue, and you're like, ah, but I get skill mastery, whereas the fighter gets a deadly strike.
Right.
And I'm expecting we'll see more of that sort of thing in the packets.
Right. Those two maneuvers are good examples of things that are exclusive to those classes, so that even though they're both using maneuvers and expertise dice, there's a reason to play a rogue, there's a reason to play a fighter. And I think that's going to be one of the things that, through the playtest process, we're really keeping an eye on is, do these classes that now use a similar core mechanic feel distinct enough? Mm-hmm. I mean, the wizard and the cleric, for example, they both use the spell core mechanic, but they have a slightly different way of preparing and casting their spells. And then, in general, the things that their spells do are very different, right? I mean, cleric spells tend to be either buffs or healing or... the occasional direct damage spell that tends to be pretty holy, magic-oriented, or, you know, commands. Whereas the wizard tends to be a little more blasty, a little more elemental in his spells. It draws a pretty big distinction between those two classes. And then, of course, those classes also have weapon and armor proficiency differences as well. We expect the cleric to be in combat bashing with his mace a little bit more than the wizard is. So with the rogue and the fighter, we're going to have to keep a close eye on, are those two classes distinct enough from one another, even though they're using the same mechanic? And so that's something we're really going to want people's feedback on as the process goes forward.
Wow. So that's a lot. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of good information, especially for players that, you know, are always constantly. You guys have said before in previous podcasts, you will accept all feedback, which is what you want. You want all feedback. But also letting players know the things that they want to focus on, things that you guys are focused on as well, is definitely going to help. So for those of you that got the new playtest packet, rewind and listen to everything again and just go out there. And again, all of the feedback we want is important. There's a ton of stuff to get feedback on. This new packet sounds awesome. It just sounds like it's going to be a total blast to play, especially because there's so much involved this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And there's even more coming.
I know. And there's more coming, which is always awesome, especially when it comes to these playtests. Like, you're like, oh, this is so good. Wait till the next one, which is always fantastic. So, gentlemen, thank you guys very much. Again, it sounds like the playtest is going extremely well. This new playtest packet, like I said, sounds awesome, and I can't wait for the next one. And we'll talk again, I'm sure, in the future when the next playtest comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you.
All right, and we are back, everybody. I am joined once again by Rodney. Rodney, a long time no see.
Hey.
And Peter Lee has joined us. Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Peter, we sort of sprung this on him because you were originally supposed to talk about Dungeon, the board game, with Chris Dupuy, but he's out. He's not, but his wife is having a baby. So we
like
all
right
wish,
now.
Like right now.
As we are recording this.
His wife is having a baby. So we wish for a healthy baby. And Chris, we love you, and take care of that child. So
Come back soon.
So we can touch on Dungeon a little bit, but we're also going to touch on, you guys are hearing these weird noises, on Dungeon Command. The newest set, Tyranny of Goblins, is currently out in store, and I am currently looking at...
Curse of Undeath.
Thank you. The Curse of Undeath, and I'm just enthralled by all these minis on here. So nice. If you guys talk about this while I just salivate over these minis, because these are amazing.
Sure. Well, Curse of Undeath is the fourth Dungeon Command faction pack. And perhaps shockingly, it covers undead creatures. Inside this box are skeletons, zombies.
There's a zombie wolf, you guys. A greyhound.
Greyhound, sir. Please get it by the right name. There is a Dracolich, which is one of my favorite pieces in the set. We have a skeletal lancer, a guy on a skeletal horse.
These pieces are beautiful looking, too.
Yeah, we've got a hypnotic spirit. One of my favorite pieces is actually the Disciple of Caius, the green worm guy that you were just touching there. Yes. Those of you who have played through the Dungeons & Dragons Age of Worms campaign will recognize the name Caius as the arch-villain of the campaign. And we have a miniature that calls back to that.
Spoilers.
Spoiler alert. Yes, I know. I mean, you know, sorry. I think the hiatus is over on Age of Worms. But, well, I mean, Caius actually appeared as far back as second edition, I believe.
Fiendfolio,
that's right.
Sons of Caius,
wow. Right. Yes. So we're reaching way back into the annals of D&D history for the Disciple of Caius. But yeah, the whole set is basically built around undead creatures as the main theme, and then of course plenty of order cards built to make those guys run. Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those sets that, like Tyranny of Goblins, not only is really good on its own, but it also adds a lot to the game as a whole, so that, you know, once you get your hands on some of the cards in here, for example, I'm looking forward to going back and revisiting my Drow Spellcaster Warband that was basically Dexterity and Intelligence. Well, now I'll have a bunch of Intelligence cards to pull out of here and put into that deck as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about strategies. For Curse of Undeath, let's say that somebody's going to jump into it starting now, and they wanted to play that. I love dead creatures, and I love all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm already considering mixing this with one of my other sets, if I were to play Curse of Undeath, what would be a good strategy to play?
Get your Lich Necromancer out.
Not quite. The big thing is there are a lot of ranged pieces with the intelligent spellcasters. So the Lich Necromancer and the Disciple of Caius are all strong spellcasters. And so they're a little vulnerable to damage. So one of the big strengths that the undead have is they also have these tough ground troops with zombies and skeletons that are there to... frankly, absorb the damage before their spellcasting leaders go down. So it's a fun sort of wall of undead flesh that the spellcasters hide behind and zapping the foes from a distance.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun deployment tricks in this set as well. For example, I'm taking a look at one of the order cards called Call to Battle. And Call to Battle is a charisma card that when you attach it to a creature, that creature can tap to deploy creatures then. So basically, your opponent has killed some of your creatures on his or her turn, then this creature can tap to get some more things out on the battlefield, which can then, of course, immediately activate as well. So
yeah. You
got some fun deployment tricks. Call to Battle is also a fun one if you can get it on to the Lich Necromancer, because the Lich Necromancer has the ability for you to deploy creatures near it, basically deploy undead near it. So basically you can drop your Lich Necromancer down, put this card on him, and then he can tap to be bringing out zombies, not just, you know, in the start zone, but also around him as well. So there's a lot of fun little combinations like that that basically let you create this relentlessly advancing horde. And it's funny I said that, because I then look down and I'm holding the Relentless Advance card. So it's a level 1 constitution card. But yeah. There's also some fun attachment cards, like the Spawn of Caius card, which an undead creature can use this card. And basically, you attach it to that creature, and whenever it starts its turn, it damages creatures around it. So you want to get your undead creature sort of forward, closer to the enemy, and then put this on it. And so it's basically creating this aura of damage around it. So there's a lot of pushing forward to tie in with the ranged spell attacks as well.
Wow. Let's talk about the commanders. Can we talk about the commanders?
Yes, we can.
All right. Sometimes we never know when we can talk about stuff. Let's talk about some of these commanders, because
sure. These
guys both look awesome. I'm looking at Morgana Valistova.
Yes, you can thank me for that name.
It's a great name.
It's a tongue twister.
It is.
Yeah, so Morgana is interesting in that she is one of those that gives a... power to all of the creatures of a certain type under her control, but it's a tap power that also costs you some morale. And basically what it does is when you tap a creature, one of your undead creatures, you lose a morale, but you can prevent 20 damage to this creature. So basically, it's in a lot of ways, it's an upgraded version of the cowering rule, but it also requires you to tap. So there's a little bit of give and take there. The idea being that basically she is putting this ability out there for all of her undead minions to have, so that your undead are even tougher to kill.
And I'm looking at Dethryn Everett right now, and he is a necromancer that he's, at first glance, his morale is only 12 and his leadership is only 6, and he doesn't look especially good at the start of the game, but his power is he gains 1 leadership for each enemy creature destroyed during your turn. So as you are destroying your enemy, your leadership value starts going up and up and up, and suddenly, you know, in the middle and the end of the game, you are fielding this vastly superior force in numbers because you have basically, the story is you are killing your opponent and turning him into undead servants of yourself. So
nice.
Right, and Delphin Everett's really good against something like goblins, where they have lots of low-power creatures that they might throw at you. So, you know, there's some strategy in picking which one of these two leaders you want to use against, you know, what you would call a weenie warband in Magic terms. Against a weenie warband, Delphin Everett is great because he's going to take every time you kill a goblin, your leadership's going up and up and up. Whereas Morgana Valastova, she's a lot better against your sort of heavy-hitting warband. So if they have lots of big creatures, you want to use her so that your undead last longer against those really powerful creatures. Delphin Everett's actually a little bit of trivia here. Delphin Everett is actually our first commander that is an existing character in the Dungeons & Dragons universe.
Oh, wow.
He is taken from an adventure that appeared in Dungeon Magazine, actually.
So you talked a little bit about strategy and other warbands. Now, let's talk about strategy. Let's say you go out there and you've got, like me, you've got every one of these that have ever come out.
Mm-hmm.
What are some good matchups? Like I don't mean good matchups like a Curse of One Death is just going to stomp them. Like, I want to know, like, what's going to provide, like, intense battles? What are some good matchups? We're going to talk about some bad matchups. and then we're going to talk combinations, because these are all things that I want to know.
Well, I already mentioned, you know, the goblins versus the undead. If you're using Delthrin, that's obviously not good for the goblins. I think when it comes to all these faction packs, out of the box, they're going to be pretty balanced with each other, right? So there's sort of ups and downs. I think that this box plus goblins, if you combine the two, there's some really interesting potential for some charisma cards and some... Constitution cards that will really, I mean, especially when you look at like the troll, for example, the troll out of goblins can benefit from a lot of cards out of this undead set too. So
nice.
Those two sets I think combine really well together. And then of course in the Heart of Cormyr pack, you've got just about every ability score represented somewhere on some creature card. So that pack is going to dip into this one as well.
What was the, I mean, obviously undead was sort of the theme behind this, but so we've got, you know, Sting of Loth, Heart of Cormyr, Tyranny of Goblins, and now Curse of Undeath. Like, is there some sort of natural progression you guys are following? Is this just something you guys, was somebody like, I really love undead creatures, let's dive into this?
I think an undead box was one of the first ones we talked about.
Yeah.
natural.
Yeah, I think, it sounds very simplistic to say this, but a lot of times when we try to figure out what we want to do, it's like, okay, what would I want, right? And what would I be excited about? And undead is always right at the top, right? And so if you look at our first five sets, right, we basically are hitting a lot of the greatest hits of D&D characters and monsters as well, just because that's what people get most excited about, right? So the only progression is, hey, what do we think is exciting to, you know, people who like D&D? Oh, yeah, zombies and Draculiches and...
So you're saying I can get a flump set coming soon.
We'll work on that. No promises. Yeah. But if there is demand, we'll see.
Do you hear that, internet? Demand, Dungeon Command, the flump set.
Right. you know, we got Curse of Undeath, we'll call it Defeat of the Flumps. Because that's pretty much what's going to happen.
That is what would happen. All right. So Tyranny of Goblins in stores now. Curse of Undeath drops when?
Next month. Well... I don't know when this is going to air, so let's just say November.
Let's say this airs in November.
Yes, it's November 20th, I believe.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Gentlemen, thank you guys for stopping by. Rodney, Peter, thank you guys
thank you.
Again. And everybody else out there, thanks for listening.